Tap, tap, tap. Good morning, friends, and good evening, because it's midnight in our time zone, your time zone, but here in Australia, it is 10 a.m. on a Saturday morning, and I'm coming at you from the river, and I notice my VU levels are quite high, but we will just, we'll run with it for a bit. This is the very first Nana Republic show, and of the year 2023, and I am going to attempt to do a great show for you, and this show is almost entirely about people and technology, and I suppose SDF, because we are a community and we have to stay close together. We have to work together in our cells and in our groups and in our communities. So we're going to kick off with this song, a very old song, and this particular song is, in my view, what technology looked like to me in the 1980s when I started getting involved. It's a happy song, so let's kick it and see where it goes.
Town in a hurry, honey, down South Avenue. You look so pretty as you were riding along. You look so pretty as you were singing this song. Well, I pulled in the speed, I tried catching up, but you were pedaling harder too. Riding along like a hurricane, honey, spinning out of you. You look so pretty as you were riding along. You look so pretty as you were singing this song. I sing the song. Around, round, wheels going round, round, round. Down, up, pedals, down, up, down. But I gotta get across to the other side of town before the sun.
As promised, I've got quite a few interviews, and I'd like to really make a start on those. You might hear seagulls, and that's because I'm at an estuary or a river. You can look that up on Mastodon if you care to. Just look up Rolly or at Rolly on Mastodon, and you should see where I'm broadcasting from. But that's not what's important. What's important is that I haven't really been missing. I've been listening to all the shows and all the DJs. And working my way through the playlist. And I stumbled upon a couple of really interesting shows that I'd not heard really before. Loving Time by M. Cornick. And Evolution Revolution by DJ Damaru, aka Jeff. And when I listen in the bath, and it's just, I run this tub and it's got like a jacuzzi thing. It's an outdoor bathroom. I light some candles and put on my relaxing shoes and slippers and slide into the water and don't come out for a long time, at least an hour. And I'm on a nice hot bath and I listen to shows. And I don't think it's easy to explain what that feels like, you know, trawling through all the DJs on radio. And so my hat off to you guys, because you do a stunning show. But yeah, let's play a little bit, a few excerpts. And I have got some interesting episodes today. Let me just close this and get into here. So first we're going to hear from DJ Damaru, and he's going to talk about, he's going to issue some thoughts, and let's see where this goes.
So I've always been interested in having fun with that, all these practices, and I feel people would benefit from more meditation in their life. I think we are in a phase in our society where there's a lot of mental illnesses, a lot of grief, a lot of suffering. And at the same time, there's a lot of practice offered. But there's, I don't know, it feels like there's a bit of a mistrust, or kind of people are making fun of, or... yeah, I'm not sure. It's not trendy to be healthy. It's kind of, you know, the suffering and the unhealthy is really the cool thing. I don't know. It's interesting. I'm observing that myself. I'm looking at society and how, yeah, there's a tendency, there's a trend, and I'm not sure too sure how to... I know that no one is, you know, there being like, don't do something good for yourself, but it feels consumerism, or the way capitalism works, or the way our culture has been, we've lost a lot of our wisdom in our culture, or passing on that wisdom, kind of leads to a lot of suffering, leads to a lot of people not having a connection with each other, or technique to calm themselves when they're freaked out, or technique to feel happier when they don't know what to do. And yeah, Evolution Revolution is all about that, how to bring that back in our culture. And it doesn't need to be spiritual, or need to reach enlightenment or anything like that, but just kind of a safety kit for well-being. So when you're freaked out, you know what to do. When you're in a situation that a lot of change happened and you're freaked out, then you're like, oh yeah, well, I know that sensation, and I know a technique to get me back on my feet. So yeah, how can we bring that back in our culture, talk about it, make it fun to have powerful tools. And yeah, talking about fun, I just see this song staring at me. Jamie Berry with Swing It. And the song is called Wing It.
Yeah, there you have it. The potential of the internet, given to us by none other than DJ Damaru, aka Jeff, in his show Evolution Revolution. So what he's proposing, he's applied a usage to technology, and he's using a non-radio to do that. But a very happy bicycle ride. and the use of technology, we really expected it to do a lot more than it has, and it seems to be letting us down ever so slightly now. But before we do that, we are going to listen to, and this happened quite coincidentally because I listened to a chap called Mark Hurst, who runs a show called Tectonic quite regularly. And he was talking about, he often does the singularity, and he talks about the misuse of tech. And he pointed us to, is it Popular Mechanics or... and at the same time, I listened to Publius, and he likewise, in his recent show, talked about, you know, the singularity and some of the issues raised by, I'm pretty sure it was Popular Mechanics, but let me play that, because it is important that we do. And this is the little excerpt, I think. I think this is it. And this is technology being misused. Right, so I shall press a D and that'll kick that off.
It starts to wander to the new colleague on your team, who you know you shouldn't be daydreaming about, given the policy against intra-office romance. But you can't help fantasizing just a little. But then you start to worry that your boss will notice your amorous feelings when she checks your brain activity and shift your attention back to the present. You breathe a sigh of relief when the email she sends you later that day congratulates you on your brain metrics from the past quarter, which have earned you another performance bonus. You head home jamming to the music with your work-issued brain-sensing earbuds still in. When you arrive at work the next day, a somber cloud has fallen over the office. Along with emails, text messages, and GPS location data, the government has subpoenaed employees' brainwave data from the past year. They have compelling evidence that one of your coworkers has committed massive wire fraud. Now, they're looking for his co-conspirators. You discover they are looking for synchronized brain activity between your coworker and the people he has been working with. While you know you're innocent of any crime, you've been secretly working with him on a new startup venture. Shaking, you remove your earbuds.
What do you think? Is it a future you're ready for? You may be surprised to learn that it's a future that has already arrived. Everything in that video that you just saw is based on technology that is already here today. Artificial intelligence has enabled advances in decoding brain activity in ways that we never before thought possible. You've heard a lot about AI over the past few years. Here at Davos, it's been the talk of the hour. But I want to talk about it in a different way, which is the ability to decode brainwave activity. After all, what you think, what you feel, it's all just data. Data that in large patterns can be decoded using artificial intelligence. Consider this. The average person thinks thousands of thoughts each day. As a thought takes form, like a math calculation, you're happy, you're tired, you're hungry, you're elated. Neurons are firing in your brain, emitting tiny electrical discharges. As a particular thought takes form, hundreds of thousands of neurons fire in characteristic patterns that can be decoded with EEG, or electroencephalography, and AI-powered devices. In fact, what you're seeing here is my brain activity while I'm wearing a simple device like the one on the right. We're not talking about implanted devices of the future. I'm talking about wearable devices that are like Fitbits for your brain.
Well, there you are. We have jumped directly into the misuse of technology. And it's very windy where I am, and it was drizzling earlier, and I'm at a park bench, so I hope the audio levels are right. But let's focus on the matter at hand, and that is the use of technology, the potential use of technology, and the planned use of technology. But let's also now listen to a song about what technology could have been like. And this is what I wanted, and I think this is what most of you guys wanted too. We are, and we have to crawl our way back to that place, that happy place of dancing in the street. Whether we do it in communities like this, or we do it in friend groups that we invite to our homes and have barbecues, or whether we frequent churches and religious organizations and institutions and meet up there, or whether we work in schools and encourage the youngsters. These are all the things that we have to kind of like do, because tech has not been a friendly companion, but it could be, and that is what we want to talk about. But now to one of my other favorite people, a guy called Mark Hurst. He runs a show called Tectonic on WFMU, and I'm a regular listener to his show. A frequenter of his blogs and writings. So let's hear him talking. You guys have heard him before on different topics, and when I hear something sweet and cool, I kind of like come back to my computer and I find it and I try and record it and squirrel it away for later use. And so here it is. So enjoy.
Sorry to hear that he gets death threats. I mean, I'm sorry to hear that anyone would get death threats for this. But if we want to talk about culpability, it's definitely not the people who tried something at the very beginning, not knowing what would come out of it. It's much more culpable for someone today who knows what they're after and continues to perpetuate or even amplify these bad practices for personal gain. Those are the people who I call out on this show, sometimes individually, but you know, the CEOs of these big tech companies, but more often just whole classes of people. If you have power and you're misusing it and you know that it's going to harm others and you're doing it for personal gain, you're responsible for that.
Absolutely. I mean, there's another essay in the book about the Volkswagen emissions scandal, in which a single engineer in a PowerPoint presentation, because all evil now goes back to PowerPoint, I suppose, in one way or another.
You know what they say, Tori? Power corrupts. PowerPoint corrupts, absolutely.
So in 2007, this Volkswagen engineer said, hey, we've got these diesel cars. We want to sell them as green friendly, but actually they're really not very green at all. But you know what we can do is we can, you know, insert some code so the car can detect if its emissions are being tested and then change the emissions. And so that was like, that's a personal culpable moment, right? That is someone making a decision that helps the bottom line while hurting the environment and perhaps, as one study suggests, leading to people's deaths. You know, that's very different than an engineer who's just sort of trying to get through the day and not explicitly trying to do bad, or as you say, the CEOs are the worst, the bigger system.
That essay was about Volkswagen, was chapter 23, The Volkswagen Emissions Scandal, How Digital Systems Can Be Used to Cheat, written by Lee Vinsel, who's an STS professor at Virginia Tech. I thought that was a great essay as well. Just imagining what it must have been like in that conference room when the engineer said, hey, boss, I think I've got a way to skirt some of these green regulations. And the boss says, that's cheating. That's a great idea. Let me run it up the chain. And all the way up through senior leadership within Volkswagen, everyone approved it. That shows the rot in a corrupt organization, that not a single person went to the press, quit their job and said, we're doing this horrible thing. But what I learned from Vinsel's essay is that Volkswagen, not to dump on them too much, they were not the first company to do exactly this.
Yeah, absolutely. In the 1970s, the EPA found that some automakers were using mechanical devices to shut down emission controls under certain circumstances. You know, so basically they could have the controls a lot of the time, except for when it was inconvenient. And then, you know, let's override them. In the early 1990s, Cadillacs had a chip that would turn off the emissions if the heat or the air conditioning was on. We've got decades of these companies trying to find first mechanical and then software ways to get around their legal and ethical environmental responsibilities.
And because the systems are so opaque, everything is just stored inside this tiny chip. It's very hard to tell when someone is cheating. And what I come away with from your book, in addition to having learned a lot, Tori, is what Ellen Ullman says in the introduction, that the fate of humanity hangs in the balance of how we engage with technology, how we build technology, how we react to it. That's no joke.
It's no joke. Or as David Bowie says in Teenage Wildlife, it's no game. It is no game. We are, these guys are, they worship the dollar, and most of them are afraid of losing the cash store that they've got, and are trying to build up lives that are perpetual instead of just enjoying the life that they've got. And the other ones, the little ones, are slaves, because we have to turn up at work and we have to do stuff. But there is a contingent of people who do things differently, and a lot of them are here on SDF And a lot of them are in other communities as well. And if you look for them, you'll find them. So find the others. Just a reminder, that last interview was Mark Hurst from a show called Tectonic on WFMU. A very fun New York, New Jersey radio station. And I've been a follower of Mark's for a long time. Like I said before, I noticed there are some fantastic DJs and some amazing topics. And one of the people I listen to in the bath is Publius. And I have an excerpt from him shortly. Remember I played you the show from Popular Mechanics, or at least the scenario of computers reading our minds as if we are slaves. Why on earth don't we just use the robots to make coffee, mow the lawn, wake us up in the morning with, you know, with a clean home and the clothes ironed? Why are they trying to use robots to make art and music and tell stories? Don't get me started with, you know, chat thing, because I've been looking at it at school and I've got 1,200 kids there who would readily use it for their assignments, and got 170 teachers who will have to scratch their heads and figure this one out. And I could just block it on the firewall, but I haven't yet, because I am a libertarian. I think we should all be free to do things, but sooner or later the request will come. And let's not tarry here. Let's not lose hope. Yeah, I'm in a park by the river. There's a picture on Mastodon. And we're out for the next interview now. But before I do that, I'm going to just tell you about my day. Actually, no, I'm not, because I can see time running away with me. So we are going to listen to our good friend Publius. And he's going to tell us some very wise thoughts. Now, this guy is pretty switched on. Like, more than pretty switched on. He is very switched on. And he's got the gift of the gab. He can talk, and he can chat, and he can... And I kind of, like, wonder why he hasn't got a much, much bigger audience. I wish he did, because I admire people who not only can speak well, but can and do have something important to say. So I think he's got something important, and here it is.
And so that's, so the whole thing just boggled my mind. Now, another thing, I saw just a headline, and it sent me just for a loop, because it was Popular Mechanics, which knows even less about it. Popular Mechanics headline saying, "The singularity could come as soon as 7 years from now." Well, I wonder, I don't know that figure 7 is coincidental, because ultimately, quote, the singularity, unquote, is just a repackaging of, quote, the rapture, unquote, for people with a somewhat different surface worldview. It's millenarianism all the way down. But I think about, what do they mean by this, really? Because remember, there's more than a billion people on this earth who haven't ever even seen a light bulb. There's billions who have no regular access to electricity, and so on. Billions more who don't have washing machines. Just exactly what is the singularity going to mean to them? No, I think about it, and I say, well, suppose for a moment that we get this so-called AI, right, which is large-scale statistical models based on large data sets, using large amounts of processor power, large amounts of machinery. We get these things put together to the point where they can very, very accurately simulate somebody, right, what they will do. And what happens then? Well, we are going to wind up with, I'm guessing, simulations of people like Jeff Bezos. You know, he's getting old. He doesn't want to die. Well, maybe his body has to die, but if he can replicate If he can create a computer program which pretends to be him, for his purposes, that's almost as good as actually so-called uploading your consciousness. We don't even know what consciousness is, so uploading it isn't really a thing that can be done or even talked about, but he can replicate himself in software. And so, yeah, you can envision it. A few thousand people out of the billions on this globe, right? A few thousand people replicated, most of them from Cupertino, California, replicated as computer models in hardware which eats about 90% of the world's electricity supply, made immortal by software copyrights, right? And they can no longer, even supposing them to have the attributes of consciousness, they can no longer feel cold or hunger or thirst or pain. All they can feel is greed. And the rest of us, again, they're using 90% of the world's electricity to run these simulations. The rest of us are left to wander in a desolated world until finally somebody gets up on his hind legs and pulls the circuit breakers, which of course isn't going to be easy if you read the story about the Massachusetts school where their smart lighting system failed and they haven't been able to turn out the lights for a year except by unscrewing them from the sockets. Yeah, that was supposed to save energy. Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. Anyway, but so yeah, finally somebody pulls the plug and you have what Frank Herbert called the Butlerian Jihad. But what I want you to do is to think, how is that materially different from the situation we are in right now? And the reason I say that, I'm sure you've heard about lots of big layoffs at places like Google and Microsoft. And these things, functionally speaking, are not that different from a giant simulation of some megalomaniac. It's just that they run partly on people as well as on computer hardware. Honestly, that's the closest we're going to get to the Matrix, to, you know, human beings being used as computers. Big business is already like that. And so you say, well, why did these companies all start getting rid of people? Laying off isn't really the word. They're just getting rid of people. Why did they do it all at the same time? Was this collusion? Well, the answer turns out to be just that a few big hedge fund managers started making calls to chief executives, and chief executives take calls from hedge fund managers because chief executives these days are compensated largely in shares, and the hedge fund managers can make those shares go up and down by market manipulation. And so the hedge fund manager can just say, well, I can tank your stock price if you don't do what I say. And what I say is that the workers are getting too uppity. Your payroll is too large, you have too many people, and you're paying them too much, and so what you need to do is get rid of some of those people, and so that will force down, of course they never say people, they say headcount, because they don't want to admit that they're talking about human beings, and that will force down the wage scale. And I have no knowledge of your business, right? I'm not in your business, I don't know how your business works, but I'm sure it would be better if you were paying fewer people less money. And so the chief executives, you know, touch their caps and say, sir, yes, sir. And they go out and start discharging people. Sometimes in violation of labor laws. And then the hedge fund managers, seeing that the executives have done what they're told, come back and say, well, I think it's time for another round. I don't think that was enough reduction. Because there's still too much wage pressure, still too much pressure from people who think they ought to get paid for working, people who don't believe that it's a privilege to be allowed to work. Yeah. You know, the computer industry is particularly bad about this. You know, their whole business model involves picking people who are psychologically vulnerable to this kind of manipulation. People who will stay in the office or stay working on something long past normal business hours. People who would, you know, as some people say, they'd rather code than have sex.
Isn't that the truth? Isn't that the truth? Well, Publius explaining things to us. And He's right. We don't want to call them people. We call them a headcount. And I worked for a tech company in London once and found myself working late. And I found myself working long hours, and I found myself committed to the task. And I had a lot of fun there. I had a lot of fun there. But my dad used to ask me, what are they putting in the water, son? I mean, this is not you. You know, I'm a beach bum. I think no one knows their son better than their dad and their mum. And, you know, I go to work because, well, I just want to bring home a bit of bacon and feed my fam and enjoy the things like I did today. I woke up early and had a coffee, and my daughter woke up and I said, do you want to come down to for a park run with me? Park run is like a 5 kilometer worldwide event that happens every Saturday morning. And we run in beautiful places. I ran along Point Cartwright along the seashore, and you run with strangers and you run with people you've maybe seen once or twice before. And you get a place and it keeps track of you. And I don't know if you guys have that in the other parts of the world that you are, but I discovered this in England once. And then I went for a swim in the surf, and then we went for a bicycle ride. And here I am at a park bench with people picnicking around me and dogs barking. I heard a couple yapping earlier, I think. And I think to myself, gee, this is a wonderful world. And that's why I work. And I think that's why many people work. But, this is, next song will tell us about what technology is doing to us. And here it is.
Than a barrel full of monkeys and my woolly
Alrighty, alrighty. I'll fade that out because I think that we've got to keep going. And and we've got to prepare a better world. And I think somebody who's really trying to do that. Well, there's a couple. There's a couple. And well, let me just collect my thoughts here. Well, firstly, we just that last excerpt was from dear old Publius, and he has a fantastic show. And I listen to A Step Further Out. That's my regular diet. And you really got to put your thinking cap on when Publius has something to say, because he talks about travel to the moon, space travel, and he talks about nuclear energy, and he talks about practical issues. And there you heard a wide sample of the kinds of practical issues. The fact is, most people out there, you know, are living hand to mouth. They're just not ready for the singularity. Besides, they've got on fine without it, and because there's a few guys in Cupertino or Silicon Valley, venture capitalists who want to get even richer so that they can press the launch button and do a countdown and leave for another planet and leave us here to sort out the mess, which maybe would be a good thing without them. Maybe it'll be a good thing. But here's a guy who I think is doing good work, and his name is Merlin Turtle, and I think I've got a chopper overhead. I quite like listening on occasion to Joe Rogan, and this guy is a bat expert, and I really like the way the interaction in the show went, because Merlin is an 81-year-old man, and he was going to say some things that were about bats, obviously. And he's lived his life passionately, and I quite like the way Joe toned down his show to accommodate him, and really the questions were great, and the way this guy looks at life, I just liked it, and I think he's leaving the world a better place one day. So I like him, and he's got a crazy good name, Merlin Turtle. what an awesome name. Anyway, here we go. Let's listen to Merlin tell us some really very wise things as well. So enjoy.
It was very difficult at first. You know, we hear a lot from environmentalists, conservationists, about the need to win battles. You know, send us X amount of money so we can beat up on such and such a company. And people, there's a certain type of people that kind of love that. And but, you know, if you're starting out to save something that everybody hates and they'd really rather spend money to kill it than to save it, you got to get a whole lot more clever than just asking them for money to save the animal. So I don't think it was because I was particularly smart or anything, but I had to learn early on to win friends instead of battles. And what I found was if I went about it right and I won enough friends, I didn't need to win the battles. And that's become kind of a dominant part of my approach to conservation is, first of all, you listen to people, and I don't care if they say, you know, I had fun burning a bat cave in which I killed thousands of bats, or whatever they say. You know, we shouldn't be dwelling in the past. It's the future that counts. And we've all made crazy mistakes in the past, and we wouldn't want to be hated for the rest of our lives for what we did wrong before we knew what was right. But I found that if I listened to people and took them seriously and understood that even the person with the wildest tale probably had some reason for believing it. And the more I listened and understood, the better I became at countering it. And also, I always had the attitude of, I'm not here to just help bats. I'm here to help people and bats. And if you got a problem, I want to know what it is. I want to understand it. And then maybe I can help you solve it. And so I learned to be good at listening to people. And I'm sure you've experienced a good share of winning is just listening. Most people will like you if you just take time to listen to them, even if you are at opposite poles of what you believe. And so by learning to listen well and then having the attitude that, what can I do to help you, I was able to change a hell of a lot of people's minds about bats.
So a lot of people, they have this idea about bats. It's based on like horror movies, vampire movies, and whenever you see like Halloween decorations, there's always bats involved. Bats are thought of as like a creepy, kind of scary animal.
Well, that's all part of just not understanding. In fact, one of the big problems for bats is that you know, out of the more than 1,400 species in the world, the vast majority of them, we hardly know a thing about them other than that they've got a name. And they fly erratically. They live in places that people often consider kind of spooky, the basement or the attic or the cave. And we don't know what they're going to do next because they fly so erratically and they're associated with the night. I mean, even people who work at night aren't trusted as much as people that work in the daytime.
That's true, right? That's true. Night shift people are kind of creepy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So these bats that we have in Austin, is there more than one species?
At least 99% one species under the bridge. There's probably two species there. One's the cave myotis that usually lives in caves, and the other is the Brazilian free-tailed bat.
And what's the most common?
The free-tailed bats.
So that's the one when you see the big swarms, most of them are the Brazilian free-tailed bats.
Right.
So is that an invasive species?
No, not by any means.
So why is it called the Brazilian free-tailed bat?
That's a good question. Species often get named by where they were first discovered. And the species was first described by specimens discovered in Brazil. Then it was discovered later that it was found all the way up into the United States. And there were subspecies named. It was thought originally that there was a different subspecies in Mexico that came up into Texas and a third subspecies in Florida and the Gulf region. And each of those subspecies, the first one was described in Brazil, so it was Tadarida brasiliensis brasiliensis, and then Tadarida brasiliensis mexicana from Mexico, and so on.
Well, 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 that was Merlin Turtle on the Joe Rogan Show talking about bats. And, let me get rid of my monitor here. Yeah, so what we got there is a guy who realizes that it's more important to win friends than it is to win battles. And we've got a battleground going on the internet, and you know, there's been a Twitter exodus, and well, you know, if I'm honest, I've kind of like gone back, but I lurk and I watch. But I really, really like the community at SDFCon. You know, I just think it's good. And I like the fact that there are people here that are searching for a better valley to live in, a better village than the one that we've been living in, because the corporates have been abusing it. So I'm running out of time. I've got somebody here who postulates a better world, and his name is Jeff. And Jeff really has got a lot to say about Gopher, and I'd like to play what he's got, but I don't think I don't think I can because it's 9 minutes. And he talks about the Gopher World and why he lives there and why he likes that place. And I think what he really enjoys a lot is the lack of distraction. He's able to read people's thoughts, and people write quite openly on there. And it seems to be a heart issue. It seems to be non-invasive. Simply, this is me, and this is me clarifying my thoughts. And certainly what I like about it, and I'm only guessing that that's what Jeff likes about it, and he has some interesting things. So there were 9 minutes of Jeff, but I'm going to pass on that, and I'll play it another show. And then I've got one last one from Jordan Peterson, and he really had a very good interview recently, and he was really making a lot of sense. A lot of sense. But I'm probably not going to get time for that either. So that leaves me with good old trusty M. Cornick, and he has a show called Love and Time. And I love the way he presents and the way he talks. And in particular, I listened to his fairly recent show all about Jamaican music. And he played a lot of reggae and ska, and he also played a little bit of dub. And he spoke about the history and how there wasn't, or how it was okay to copy one another, and they didn't have copyright, and maybe they should have, because a lot of people done stole their music, made a lot of money on it. But isn't that what the big industries do? So I'm going to play this song. When I find it, I'm going to play it. And it's Captain and Tennille, and it's kind of like where we're going to have to go with technology. We're going to have to keep it all together. Looks all be gone. Well, well, there's some interesting changes in that song. It kind of like you just suddenly hear this little piano ditty going on. But yeah, the message is true. Stop, I really love you. We need to stop and we need to care for each other a bit more. And, you know, when you're out here on a day like today, everybody loves everybody. But when you get to work on Monday morning, it's a big bun fight. I'm lucky because I work in a Christian school, and it's quite a nice environment. And these poor dogs are all tied up around with their owners, who own easy chairs or like sort of like park benchy things. And you can see the dogs are just social; they just want to hang out, and that's what we were designed to do. So I'm going to play out with this last song by Jack Johnson. It's called Hope. And it's really what we need to do. And if you listen carefully to this words, to these words, you'll kind of like hear a message about what could happen and what is happening and how to get out of this mess. And it's called Hope by Jack Johnson. I hope you enjoy it. And until I see you all again, I don't know when I'll broadcast again. I'm probably going to do it monthly. Because today I enjoyed this show and I don't think I made too many mistakes. In fact, I don't think I made any, but let's not say anything yet.
Your shadow walks faster than you. You don't really know. At the end of a roll of delusion.